Welcome back to the Young China Watchers podcast. We're a network of young professionals interested in China. Our 10 chapters around the world organize virtual and, where we can, live events with China experts. My name is Sam Colomby, and I head the global editorial team. And today we're joined by one of our writers calling from Bulgaria, Mirela Petkova. Hi, Mirela.
Hi, Sam.
You interviewed Philip Shebok. Can you tell us a little bit about him?
Right. So Philip is a project manager and a China Research Fellow at the Association for International Affairs in Prague, Czech Republic. His work has focused extensively on Chinese domestic and foreign policy, as well as China's foreign policy rhetoric. We discussed Czech Republic's position within the 17+1 initiative and to the future of Central and Eastern Europe with China. But for my first two questions, I wanted to get an understanding of China's role within Czech Republic's domestic politics.
Sounds good. Let's start there.
Thank you so much for being here, Philip.
Thank you, Mirela, for having me.
I'm very excited. So let's set the scene here for Chinese enthusiasts that are not so familiar with the trajectory the Czech Republic has taken in its relations with China in recent years. So relations have started to deepen since China's launch of the 17+1 initiative in 2012. Which is basically the cooperation between China and the seven countries in Central and Eastern Europe, Czech Republic included. But can you tell us a little bit more about the initial days of the cooperation? What were the expectations that were set forward by both Prague and Beijing? And how was the rhetoric at the time?
Thank you again, Mirela. And as you said, it's true that the context for this restart of the relationship is, of course, China's entrance into the whole region of Central and Eastern Europe in 2012. But basically, the reason that China could establish this cooperation with the countries in the region was that there was this need, of course, on their side. And Czechia, in this respect, was not really that different from other countries in the region. Of course, Czechia was different in that sense that it has years back before the whole initiative was established. There were some very intensive tensions between China and Czech Republic over the Dalai Lama visit and the meeting with the Prime Minister at the time, also over the Olympics. And, you know, it was a very difficult time for bilateral relations. But then the government at the time, and it was actually the right-wing government. And, you know, the right has been traditionally viewed in Czech Republic as those who are more critical of China. But they already at the time started to reconsider this approach towards China that for a long time had been based on stress on human rights, you know, very prominent role of the Tibet issue, of Taiwan. So these were the first signs. And, you know, in 2013, there were presidential elections, a very key development when President Zeman was elected. It was him who started this whole development of changing the Czech policy towards China. He appointed a caretaker government at the time that basically made the first moves in this direction. And then there was a government led by the Czech Social Democratic Party, also a very key actor in this turn towards China, that basically finalized this whole restart. There was a visit of Czech foreign minister in China after a very long time. And of course, in 2016, this whole transformation of Czech policy towards China was finalized, you could say, by the visit of Chinese President Xi Jinping in Prague.
I'm very curious about the rifts in the domestic policy in Czech Republic when it comes to the political parties. And I think this is especially relevant because, if I'm not mistaken, you have upcoming general elections this autumn. So how are those rifts between parties translated in China policy? And can we actually expect any major changes in Czech Republic's acting government as a result of the general elections in autumn?
So basically, the main promoter of ties with China was the Czech social democracy. So there are these currents in social democracy, especially a lot of the people, even former politicians, people who went into business. There was this very strong, basically, network of pro-China people around the party, also around President Zeman, who in the 1990s was also a prime minister for the Czech Social Democratic Party. Then you had the ANO party in the government. I'm talking about the government led by Social Democrats since 2014. And ANO, which was founded and is led by Prime Minister Andrej Babiš, has always been more of a pragmatic force on issue of China. And, you know, since ANO became the most powerful party in Czechia and Babiš became prime minister, also this enthusiasm for China decreased significantly. Of course, this was not the only reason. There were other reasons. The promise of economic results of the cooperation did not realize. The Chinese investments didn't really come in the amount that was expected. From this pragmatic attitude for Prime Minister Babiš, China has not been a priority for him, and he himself said that. But still, he has to accommodate President Zeman, who basically is still the strongest force lobbying for a good relationship with China. And on many issues, Babiš actually depends on Zeman's support, so he doesn't want to antagonize him. And, you know, apart from these two parties that are in the government coalition right now, of course, we have the communists, a long-term friend of Chinese Communist Party, even more than the Czech Social Democrats, although you could say that less consequential, but, you know, they have been very consistent in supporting Chinese interests, you know, on the Huawei's involvement in Czech 5G rollout, on Chinese involvement in building a new reactor of the Dukovany nuclear power plant, all of these issues always supporting China. And then you have the opposition. They've been very critical of this whole restart of relations with China and of the policy that government has taken on these issues, with some exceptions of the, you know, the far-right parties, for example.
Right. So much of the diplomatic action that I've seen on behalf of the Czech Republic is kind of attributed to your first president, who was also notoriously anti-communist, Václav Havel. And I'm just curious about your view to what extent the country's experience with communism has played a significant role in its perception of China. Has it contributed to the critical view, as you mentioned, or it has been misguidedly attributed, so to say?
The attribution to Czech views on China to being affected by communism are right. There's more to it. And actually, my good colleague has written a piece for our platform on that, saying that this Czech stance on China actually comes, you can trace it back a lot earlier in Czech history, and this like building of national identity of what Czech Republic should stand for, you know, if it should stand for something like values and so on, or, you know, if it should be following mostly pragmatic interests and so on. And of course, this was the legacy of President Havel, anti-communist revolutionary, is very strong. And you could actually say that his persona is a very significant factor in influencing the views on China. You know, he was very outspoken on issues of human rights, Tibet, Taiwan. He even called for Taiwan to get a UN seat. And his legacy led to this, to China being seen as a symbol, as a negative symbol. And a lot of modern Czech identity, for a big part of Czech population, they have identified or they have constructed their identity as the opposite of something, basically negatively towards the East. And this is, of course, represented by Russia, so the big baddie, you know, of Czech history, the country, of course, that occupied Czechoslovakia for more than 20 years, representative of the communist regime that was actually brought to us, you know, from abroad, something that was not homegrown, the big superpower bully imposed on us. And in this view of Russia, China, you know, reminds many people of what Russia has represented. And this is something that many people want to stand against.
Right. For me, it's very curious how China has managed to become much more present in the political space in Central and in Eastern Europe in only a short amount of time since the initiative started.
Definitely. As I said, China has become also a symbolical issue for many people. And, you know, in Czech Republic, it was a really high profile transformation of Czech foreign policy, something that many people paid attention to. So there was a really a big monumental change that was happening. But then with more Chinese activities in Czech Republic, there came also a lot more scrutiny. And the issue for China has been that it has really associated itself with, you could say, the wrong people in the country, or basically puts its fate in the hands of some parts of the political spectrum, and by doing that basically antagonized the opposing side. And China has basically become an issue of domestic politics. So it's no longer about foreign policy. It's about domestic politics, it's about self-identification. And actually, China has been used as a tool within domestic politics. So oftentimes, we can talk about Chinese influence as such, but maybe we could talk about how China is used actually by Czech politicians to achieve their interests. And of course, the most prominent case is when the president of the Czech Senate was to visit Taiwan. It was at the time was Senate President Kubera, who suddenly died before he could go on the visit, and then he was replaced by Vystrčil. But it was found that Kubera received some kind of document, or it has become known as a Chinese letter, some kind of document that listed what kind of actions China would take if the visit was to take place. And it actually mentioned, sanctioning of specific Czech companies like, Škoda, the automaker, like Home Credit, the big financial company that's active in China. And this was a big scandal. And it was actually found that it was the president's office, Zeman's office, that actually asked for the statement of what moves China would take in reaction to the Taiwan visit. So, it was basically Zeman trying to use China for his own goals.
No, I see. So after Kubera died, there has nonetheless been a visit to Taiwan from the new Senate leader, Vystrčil. I'm wondering again how this time the situation played out when it comes to China's reaction and then to the way, for example, the Czech government supported the Senate leader, or, well, perhaps it didn't.
The Czech government didn't support the visit to Taiwan. Of course, you could see it as part of official policy. Of course, the Czech Republic doesn't recognize Taiwan. This was seen as something that could be problematic for Czechia if there was, some sense of officialness of the visit. It's good to stress that Vystrčil is from the opposing party, so domestic policy plays a big role. So they did not support the visit, but after Vystrčil went there and, China reacted basically with very strong words, then Prime Minister said it was unacceptable. Also, there were condemnation from Czech Foreign Ministry and so on. Overall, we have not really seen any kind of strong reaction from China. And I think it maybe also betrays the fact that the Republic is not that important, actually, in terms of Chinese foreign policy. So maybe they didn't see it as such a big deal overall.
That's very curious, because I was thinking how Czech Republic's experience can be compared to other countries. Are there actually any lessons that other small countries that have such possible grievances with China can take?
It is the case in also other countries as Lithuania, that actually are not very economically dependent on China. From Germany, for example, we have seen much more cautiousness. It's actually interesting that a lot of economic relationship with China for many countries in Central Europe is mediated via Germany. You have these regional, supply chains that are very much centered on Germany. And of course, Germany's economic relationship with China is very, very strong. But to get back to what I was saying, so you have this another example of Lithuania that is very ambitious in terms of its moves towards China, basically stepped out of 17+1, also wants to improve relationship with Taiwan. So again, the factor of not really facing any kind of meaningful Chinese reaction is something that probably plays a big role.
Lithuania, I think it's such a great example, because only a couple of weeks ago, I believe, the foreign ministry discussed whether the 17+1 format as it is beneficial to Lithuania, and to what extent Lithuania actually has a future in it. Should it leave the format? Should it stay? I'm wondering on that topic, do you see the 17+1 disbanding in the future for any reason? And what role do you see for the Czech Republic in it?
First, in terms of the Czech role, it seems like the whole Czech-China policy has been kind of not really moving anywhere. And, you know, Lithuania's decision apparently to leave, you know, it's been kind of Schrödinger's position for Lithuania. We don't know whether they're in or out. So this might, of course, lead the other countries to take a similar move. I think it may be interesting to watch what damage limitation strategies China will make. The best option for them is to try to downplay the format. I would not expect them to basically concede that the format is losing countries and maybe just, you know, try to, you know, change the frequency of the summits or something, or change the rank at which these gatherings are taking place. I think they'll try to find a way, some face-saving way out of this. Of course, you know, it also depends on the development of China-EU relations. If, you know, now it seems like they're really deteriorating and China may again try to woo some Central and Eastern European countries, but most of them, they have basically bought what China was saying at the beginning, but now they know better. Especially the Baltic countries, the V4 countries. Of course, there are Hungary is an exception, and Poland is interesting because recently it seems like the China has been putting a lot of focus on Poland. But overall, this is kind of a zombie, the whole format that doesn't really have much of a future. But, you know, we might be surprised by developments going forward. So China's best bet is probably, you know, just downplaying the format as such, maybe doing what it has been actually doing, focusing on Hungary and Serbia as kind of representative of the whole region and saying our relationship with CE is good because, you know, our relationship with Serbia and Hungary is good, which, of course, is not evocative of the overall situation in the region.
I tend to agree very much with you that the format is in its eclipse days, so to say, because I remember when I started working on 17+1, most of the rhetoric in, again, international media was how countries in the region are the Trojan horse for China. But now when you turn back and when you look at what has happened, countries such as the Czech Republic, Romania to some extent, Slovakia as well, and as you said, the Baltics, so the majority of 17+1, they've become the most outspoken countries within the EU when it comes to China, partially due to that they are not so perhaps economically exposed as the big ones like Germany and like France. Now that the 17+1 is in such a stage, do you think that China managed to achieve the goals with which it started the initiative, or we can translate it more as a failure for what Beijing intended initially?
Yes, basically, it's hard to say what China has achieved. You could say that we now have, actually, it's been for the benefit of CE countries that we have actually learned to deal with China, talking about just the amount of contacts that have been happening. You know, also on working level, of course, there's a lot of focus on the high-level summits, but there have been, you know, various sectoral dialogues and so on and so on. A lot of this has been, of course, not productive and mostly led by Chinese side as propaganda activities and so on and so on. But still, it gained some experience. So it's been definitely for the benefit of countries here to see that they can also deal with China to some capacity and see how it works, what they can actually get from China, what they can't get. And now I think they're much more qualified to actually contribute to the European debate on China. One of the criticism, or on the strands of criticism that has been coming from the region, was that while Western European countries were promoting their relationship with China and establishing very strong economic ties, the Central and Eastern European countries did not really get a seat at the table. And this is, I think this has been quite a justified criticism. So now it's up to countries in the region to really make their voice heard, to try to think of their own perspectives on these issues. And I think they now have them. they now have the experience. And they can also make the EU's China policy more diversified, you know. So I think overall, China has actually maybe given us more than it has taken from the region.
very unfortunately, that brings the end to our episode. But before ending, I really wanted to thank you for your time and for insights on this topic that I believe that will become more and more relevant for the EU, how China and Central and Eastern European countries interact.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure. I really enjoyed it.
That was Philip Szebok, project manager at the Association for International Affairs, interviewed by Mirela Petkova, writer for Young China Watchers. Go to youngchinawatchers.com to find out about upcoming events, chapters near you, or to watch one of our webinar replays. My name is Sam Colomby. The music for this episode is by Blue Dot Sessions. Thank you.